Hey, let's start the show.
It's September 19th, 2013. Welcome to This Is Only a Test, the official podcast of Tested.com. I'm Will Smith, seated clockwise around the table from me, Wesley Fenlon.
Hello.
Wait, no, that's anti-clockwise. How you doing, Wes?
We spent like 30 seconds and you already messed up.
That's what we do here. There's nothing but mess ups
all
the way down.
It's okay to mess up after doing the intro. It only matters if you mess up before you do the intro.
Yeah, if you mess up at the first three words of the intro, you got to start over and it's a big process. Norman Chan, between Wesley and myself. Mm-hmm. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing okay.
Are you prepared?
That's the Boy Scout motto.
You're always prepared. You were a Boy Scout.
Be prepared.
I was a Boy Scout.
It's the Boy Scout marching song.
Wes, were you a Boy Scout?
I was not a Boy Scout. I'm never prepared.
Get the fuck out. We're done with you. It's been a good run.
I didn't like the Boy Scouts so much.
Did you burn your certificate?
I sent my medal back.
You sent your medal back?
The badge, the little thing.
That doesn't...
I don't know where the certificate is.
The secret to Boy Scouts
yeah.
is that... anyone can go to the Boy Scout store and just buy the stuff.
Yeah, but you don't get the little. I got a little box that was velvet that had the hangy badge.
That's the medal.
The medal, the badge.
The badge. And then the,
I want to say like
a patch,
a pin, maybe. Well, a patch, I guess. The medal, the patch, and then something else. I don't remember what the third thing was.
It was the medal. You get a medal pin. I think with Eagle, it's actually on like a small ribbon.
Yeah.
And then you get the badge and you get a certificate signed by the honorary executive scout,
which was George,
who's the president,
Bush,
the current president,
the first
of the United States.
When I was a Boy Scout,
right.
When
and I got and
scout.
I got
you got George Bush the second.
I got George Bush the second. Or no.
Did you get Clinton?
I was pissed I didn't get Clinton, but I don't think I got Bush. I think I got
well, it had to be either Bush, Obama, or Clinton.
No, I think I got Cheney.
Really?
I think
he delegated.
I gotta go home and check. It's on the certificate. I did not burn my certificate.
I'm back to okay with the Boy Scouts.
Cheney was the one who's secretly in charge of everything all along.
Well,
including the bigoted Boy Scouts.
But the Boy Scouts are back to like, hey, everybody, let all the councils do their own thing, which is okay. I'm okay with that.
I think. Is that really what they are?
I thought that's what the policy was.
I don't know if that's.
You mean to fact check that or ruin the podcast?
I think they met halfway. Allowing gay Boy Scouts, but not gay Scout leaders. And I think it's still a point of contention right now, whether it's okay to support the Boy Scouts or not.
There's a Wikipedia entry called Boy Scouts of America Membership Controversies.
Right, the membership controversy.
It's really long.
Do you think the people in the Vietnam War era who burned their diplomas and stuff regret it?
I don't think – my diploma hasn't mattered to me since – like I think it's in a tube in my garage someplace.
It doesn't make you not a graduate.
Right. I still have it on my resume. If somebody wants a transcript, I bet I can probably pay $50 and get a transcript.
If I went to Harvard, I might be kind of bummed.
You want
that
the seal,
that
right?
I burned that. But
I love the
official seal.
Oh, different seal. I apologize. We are going to be in New York this week.
Yeah, so short podcast this week.
Yeah, we're recording on Wednesday afternoon. We're getting ready to get on an airplane tomorrow morning. If everything goes well. So we're going to run down the news in just a minute. But we're going to be in New York. We're going for World Maker Faire again because we had a great time last year. I loved the different flavor of the New York Maker Faire to the Bay Area Maker
Faire. If Bay Area Maker Faire and World Maker Faire were two beverages or just flavors, like you said, what flavors would they be?
I think that Bay Area would be like Hawaiian Punch. Something very sweet.
Okay.
A little bit of bright color, splash of bright color. Something that kind of walks up and smacks you. Like it's right up in your face.
New York tasted like a can of Science.
Yeah, I don't know what Science tastes like. Maybe it's still a little metally.
A little tinny.
Maybe one is Hawaiian Punch from an aluminum can and one is Hawaiian Punch from one of those steel cans that you punch the top in.
I would agree that Bay Area Maker Faire, if it was a flavor, would be like Hawaiian Punch. Maybe like a... maybe like a pina colada.
I think like, oh, you pina colada is not
it's
bad.
It's more folksy.
Yeah, it's art. There's a lot of art. I mean, there's a lot.
So you're saying it's more like a John Daly.
I don't know who John Daly is.
That's a Arnold Palmer with a little bit of alcohol.
Oh, John Daly is the golfer. I thought we were talking about the guy that the road was named after.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Like an Arnold Palmer. So it's a mix of.
I don't think alcohol is the mix for
it's
San
refreshing
Francisco
like
Bay
lemonade,
Area Maker Fair.
But also
it's a family friendly event.
Refreshing
Norm.
Like iced tea.
The
and
actor
also
slash rapper.
The beverage.
Oh, I do like an iced tea.
New York Maker Fair is more of.
It tastes like Werner's.
Is it a sophisticated beverage?
No, I think it's a soda still. It's for the people.
What would you drink on a mini golf course? Because there was a mini golf course at the New York Center for Science.
Hall of Science.
Hall of Science.
I like to drink a little ginger beer on a mini golf course. Something with a little bite to it.
Ginger beer is right for New York Maker Faire. It's the right level of pretentiousness for New York.
Yeah, you know, I felt like if you... On the other hand, the venue was very different. Like, it was a completely different... It's a different
field
of
beer
event.
Bottled in early 1900s.
These metaphors are terrible.
And recently unearthed in a time capsule, and you drink it now. It's a little flat.
So you're saying that Queens is more hipstery than San Francisco?
And also, it was the location of the New York World's Fair.
Yeah,
so
the
early
bit from Men in Black.
Yes.
Yeah.
With the saucers.
I think we should be specific about what's different about New York Maker Faire and San Francisco Maker, Bay Area Maker Faire.
I'm trying to make this for one podcast thing, last as long as possible.
Way more talks.
They have
guest speakers.
No, they have a lot of guest speakers at the San Francisco, and we just never go to them.
I went to a fair number this year in San Francisco, and maybe it's more the venue is different. Like, they actually have a couple auditoriums in New York where they have the bigger speakers talking.
Yeah.
I think San Francisco is a little more casual in the way they arrange their presentations.
Well, it's like a fairgrounds versus
totally
a kind of like learning
lecture
place.
Hall.
Yeah. The thing that I noticed immediately was that there was a lot more kind of East Coast science institution and technical school stuff. There were a lot of robots. There were a lot of 3D printers. There were a lot of drones. There was a lot of cool technology stuff done that you read about from people like MIT's Media Lab and the Carnegie Mellon stuff. And like, there was a lot more of that stuff.
And no big
in
exhibit
New York
hall.
Maker Fair. And no what?
No big exhibit hall.
No big dark place. Yeah, so like there was no place for the RC cars that light up that look like sharks and are kind of awesome and stuff.
Well,
like
no,
that.
Even the exhibit hall
where everybody has their own kind of small booth.
Well, that was all in like tents. It was kind of spread out.
It was
distributed.
No big hall. Yeah. It's outdoors.
So anyway, if you're in the greater New York area and you want to do something fun on Saturday and Sunday this weekend, Maker Faire is there. It's like $30 a person or something like that. I don't know what it costs.
It's also the same weekend as the XOXO conference in Portland, Oregon.
Yeah.
And so many of the speakers who I think typically would be at Maker Faire, normally at Maker Faire, are now actually this year at XOXO.
Yeah, so I went to XO last year because it was in October, a different time of year. And was a little bummed to have to choose between them this year, but Maker Faire is a great event for us. So we will be at Maker Faire. Let's see, Maker Faire business. Anything else? We're doing some other stuff in New York too, but we'll share that when we're a little closer.
What was the best thing from last year? Let's recap things we did last year's Maker Faire.
We went to see MakerBot. Old headquarters where they started the company.
The Bot Cave. Where are their new headquarters now?
They're around the corner or something. They're still in Brooklyn, I think, but it's a more modern... Okay. Like, the place that they were in was an old-ass warehouse. It looked like it leaked, maybe.
I don't think we spent enough time in Brooklyn last year. Brooklyn apparently is the cool place for startups and makers.
There's a lot of... Well, space is cheap. Or cheaper, as the case may be.
Used to be cheap.
Yeah, it's like the difference between getting space in North Beach in San Francisco or getting space in the Mission. You can probably afford a little more space in the Mission. Although hopefully we're going to go see a crazy mad scientist lab in Chinatown. So like, there's plenty of stuff to do all over the city. I loved that kid who made the kids who made the drones, who made the RC planes out of foam core. I thought that was super cool. So the Brooklyn Aerodrome guys, I think, had made a design for like a control system for a flying wing style RC car, RC plane that for $200 for the radio and the motors and the aileron controls and servos and stuff for that. Basically, you could build your own flying wing out of a big piece of MDF or like thick cardboard even probably. And they performed really well, and the people were flying them. They were really neat, and they were huge.
I saw Stephen Wolfram's son, who was like 11 or 12, give a presentation at Maker Faire in front of a couple hundred people where he was showing off how drones work, a quadricopter, and was programming like the routing information in it himself, and it didn't work, and he debugged it live,
on stage,
and then it worked.
It's pretty rad.
And he'd programmed like a, I think it was like a follow mode where it would just stay within a certain distance of somebody, and like, or maybe it was just a route where it would go up, move, go, you know, and then land again. But he was like 12 years old and clearly smarter than most everybody else.
What are you doing with your life, Wes?
Writing about him.
Okay, that's good.
About
that's
12
good. Sharing the word.
Smarter than me. Yeah.
What do you guys have a strategy for if a drone starts stalking you?
A drone.
Like if you're walking down the sidewalk and you realize that all of a sudden 40 feet above you there is a drone that has been following you for 5 blocks, do you know what you would do?
Go inside.
So that's a good first step.
Yeah.
Keep walking until the battery wears out. Step 2.
Yeah, take a picture. Tweet it.
Okay, tweeting the drone. I think I understand where you're going with that, but I don't know that it would work. Throw rocks at it,
until
maybe?
Until they have guns or can dive bomb you, I'm not real worried about it.
They can still dive bomb you.
Yeah.
Yeah, but at least most of the quadricopters we've seen have, like, you know, rubber, you know, or foam around them. Like, it's not
metal blades.
It's not gonna hurt.
If a drone dive bombs you, you own it, right?
What do you mean?
If you survive the cuts? If you can grab a drone out of the air, it belongs to you now. It's how, like, birds work, right?
Razor tipped drone blades. That's all I'm saying. Yeah, right. I'm not going to grab a drone.
If you can catch a falcon,
yeah,
it belongs to you.
I don't think it works that way. I don't know if that's the law.
It should be the law.
Well,
if you can catch it with your bare hands, no gloves. If you can catch a quadricopter out of the air with your bare hands, it now belongs to you. You might have to buy a new controller.
Yep. You have to, if they have some sort of
transmitter,
maybe a new radio for the mm-hmm. for the quadricopter side.
Mm-hmm. But if you can catch it,
it's yours.
It's you own it.
Okay.
That is the rule of law in the sky.
So says Norm. So say we all. Mm-hmm. Should we talk about news? So anyway, we're going to be in New York this weekend. The last half of this week, probably a little slow updates on the site. We have some stuff planned. And then we're back on Tuesday,
updates,
I think.
Regular scheduled.
We'll be at the Microsoft event on Monday.
Yes.
In New York.
Surface.
That happened to work out. Who knew?
Yeah.
And then that's it. I think we're planning on maybe eating some pizza, maybe go and have some noodles.
I'm eating at all the exact same places I went to last year.
Well, okay, so what's your plan? Halal?
I'm going to do halal once.
Yeah.
Not twice. Halal once, Shake Shack. I'm thinking I definitely want to go have the pastrami sandwich again.
Okay. You're not going to mix it up and try Carnegie's this time instead of
that might
the
be a
Katz?
Proximity question. I like Katz's a lot.
Katz is really good.
I've been waiting for a Katz's opportunity for a whole year.
You know, there's a Katz's in L.A. I don't know if it's the same.
No, we had no Houston was where there was a Katz's.
Oh, you're right, and we didn't go.
We didn't go, but I think it wasn't the same. We looked it up.
Okay,
it was just called spelled
Houston's,
the same way.
Houston is really big too, so it could have been like 100 miles away. Are you going to go back to Momofuku?
I don't know if I'm waiting in line. We do. We know Dave Chang now. Maybe
we do know Dave Chang now.
We didn't have that much of a wait last time.
It was like 30 minutes.
The point is, I have no problem going back to New York, one of the biggest cities in the world, with incredible number of food options, and eating exactly what I ate last year because it was that good.
It's been a year. You really don't like. I feel like that is a severe tactical error, given that.
You've experienced it already.
Meals have been experienced.
Right.
But so
were they not great?
They were great.
It's like watching a great movie. I have no problem watching a movie over again if I only have one chance a year to watch it.
We just need to go to New York more often. That's the lesson.
I'm definitely going to some different places.
Yeah, I think I'm with Wes. I think where, a little bit of the same.
Yeah. Well,
and then maybe mix it up
more
a
meals
bit.
In.
Yeah.
Have more breakfasts. There are places I went last year that I don't want to go this year because I didn't think they were that impressive.
Yeah. For example, are you going to call anybody out?
I don't want to call anyone out.
That Italian restaurant that we went to in Times Square because we were desperate and really hungry.
We'll not eat there this year.
Yeah.
So it can be a little more efficient. There are fewer days this year, so there are fewer eating opportunities.
The place that we accidentally had the $75 appetizers, that was across the street from the pizza place on the night we went to see Upright Citizens, I think, or at UCB.
What?
Oh, I missed that meal.
Yeah, it was just Norm and me.
I went to a
where we
really
sat down and
restaurant.
We were like, hey, let's have a beer and appetizers while we wait for everybody to get here. And then it was like $110 and we had, you know, some bread and...
Yeah, New York can get you that way.
Yeah.
It kind of got on top of us. That was unpleasant.
Okay, so New York this week. We'll keep you posted. Follow us on Twitter if you want to see where we're
going. If you are listening to this before the weekend is over, please let us know of places you would like us to see. We might have some time in the evenings.
Yeah, and if you see us at Maker Faire, say hi. We love to say hi, unless we're shooting something at that moment. But you can feel free to hang around and say hi afterwards.
Will also likes to be called Adam.
Yeah, and Norm likes to be called Grant. So it's a
nicknames are great.
Right, it's perfect for everyone. iOS 7, it's out this morning. We're recording on Wednesday, yesterday for you guys.
You have already.
This doesn't
had it?
Impact you, Norm.
Well, it does because I still have an iPhone 5, and okay. I still want to install it and experience
it. You want to experience it yourself for the first time?
It's always good to stay informed on all about all the popular platforms, except Windows.
Yep, we hate
Windows. Except Windows.
Guess what sucks, Norm? Hey, what's your least favorite mobile platform?
Probably Firefox OS.
Hey, Wes, what's your least favorite mobile platform?
Hold on. Have you used Firefox OS?
That's my least favorite.
What about BlackBerry? Have you ever used a BlackBerry?
BlackBerry isn't even part of my worldview anymore.
We've got two bits of BlackBerry news. I'm going to go ahead and just blast them out right now in the interest of time. BlackBerry Messenger is going to be out for iOS and Android this weekend. And BlackBerry is laying off 40% of their workforce reportedly also this weekend. Yeah.
But they'll be able to keep in touch.
You know, I'm going to put the silver lining on that.
No, don't joke about layoffs. It sucks.
Okay. No silver lining.
iOS 7 is out.
And also, I actually do care about Windows Phone. We just haven't had the opportunity to use new Windows phones yet.
Yeah. So we don't care very much, is what you're saying.
Not enough to spend $600.
I don't know if it was a rumor or is basically confirmed that Falcon sent us on Twitter the other day that the next Nokia phone has a 6-inch screen.
Great!
Are we sure it's a phone?
It could be a phablet.
I thought it was. I could be wrong. I really would like to.
I know that was the wording in the tweet.
I would like to be wrong because if it's a six inch screen also and not just like the overall body of the phone, then fuck that so much.
You know, the Galaxy Note is a giant ass thing. People like that.
5.5 inch.
It's, once you get above 5.5 inches, it doesn't matter. Add another 3 inches. Make it an 8-inch phone. Just tuck it into your shoe.
But Android, it makes sense because as screen size and resolution increases, the software is good enough, smart enough to know that you could fit, it'll change the DPI of
the
icons.
The canvas gets bigger, yeah.
And you can put more widgets on there. With Windows Phone, there are more home screen blocks, potentially, maybe, but they're not like, you know, full screen widgets.
Well, and Windows Phone still supports a fixed number of resolutions, right? So it's not like you could conceivably have a 6-inch phone with a really crazy low res screen, like 1280 by 800 or something like that.
3DS XL sells pretty well.
Yeah, that thing's big. So early reports on iOS 7 are that if you have an iPhone 4, performance is pretty bad. So you may want to hold off on upgrading your iPhone 4s to iOS 7 if you have
it. Is it unusable?
Already. I haven't actually seen it. I've heard people complaining vociferously. I've heard people saying it's not that bad. The Anantech benchmarks, Anand did extensive benchmarks with his pre-release 5S, the 5C, the 5, the 4S, and the 4. And his conclusion was that if he was using a 4 still, he would not have wanted to upgrade it to 7.
I think a lot of the animation / load time stuff was basically double because it would go from like 1.5 seconds to 3 seconds or 2.5 seconds.
It was
usually a second to 2 seconds added on. And given the kind of how quickly those things move normally, that was pretty much double the amount of time on a lot of them.
The other thing I had heard people say was that even on the 4 and the 4S, there's some typing lag occasionally, which is something I haven't experienced on the iPad mini, which is, again, equivalent to an iPad 2, which is like an A5, I guess. Still faster than the iPhone 4, 4S, or at least the 4.
Faster than the 4.
Yeah, it's not faster than the 4S. It's a bummer. It's not good. So we'll keep you posted about this as people.
And it sounds like in terms of battery life, also potentially not good for the 5.
So Ars Technica did a report in their review where they ran their benchmarks on a whole passel of phones. One of the things that they tested was battery life using a custom developed script that basically does loads a bunch of Wi-Fi pages and then refreshes them from cache over a period until the battery conks out, basically. And then it uses timestamps to determine how long that took. They got normal-ish results. You know, you typically with a new version of iOS, you expect to lose a little bit of battery life because there's more stuff going on in the background. That's held true since background tasks started in iOS 4, basically. This is more like they saw a massive decrease, like 2.5 or 3 hours.
Yeah, so the other phones,
I thought it was like 120 minutes.
No, it was 3 hours.
220 minutes.
The other phones, it was like 30 minutes ish. Yeah. So it was not that much.
On a 6 hour run or something like that, right? Or 10 hour run, rather. Yeah. 600 minutes.
And so, this is on specifically a Verizon iPhone 5.
Yeah.
That was flashed. So fresh.
Clean.
Yeah. And done twice.
So I've been charging my iPhone 5. They sent me the instructions for their benchmark. We're going to see if we can confirm or deny that there's a problem. The hunch, the feeling that everybody had, that it was Andrew who wrote the story, I think, right? Talking to him on Twitter, he felt like there may be some sort of weird one-off bug that their benchmark uncovered. That because I haven't seen in day-to-day use a three-hour decrease in battery life.
It's pretty big.
That's the kind of thing you would notice. And even with a new phone, like even running the GMs, which had worse battery life, I mean, even running the betas, which have worse battery life than you'd expect because of debug code and stuff like that, I wasn't seeing anywhere near, you know, maybe 30 minutes less. But I'm still seeing on my iPhone 5 that I unplug it when I get up in the morning. I use it all day. I plug it in when I go to bed, and it's at like 20%, 15 to 20%. So I hardly ever see the 20% battery life warning. Unless, as we all know, you're in a situation where the radio is having trouble finding signal, or that's pretty much where I have big battery loss problems.
GPS eats it up pretty quickly too, but not as much as bad signal.
Yeah, bad signal is the if you're someplace where you have 1x data, you might as well just turn off the phone because it's going to last like 20 minutes.
I wish there was an easy way to have that phone notify you that it's struggling, or be smart enough to know that if it's looking for signal.
Yeah, the phone should be smart enough to know, hey, I'm in a sporadic signal, and then if it's in your pocket.
Well, sporadic signal can mean a lot of different things, a lot of different situations, and you would assume the right assumption for most people is that, you know, they want a connection at that moment. You know, the phone should not shut off cellular by itself.
No, that's true. But it should maybe increase the time between polls from once every second or whatever it does now to once every 5 seconds or 10. You know, if it increases the time by 10, that battery will last 10 times longer.
Especially
rather than just flailing like, you know, like a fish flapping on the dock waiting to die.
Especially when it's in sleep.
Yeah, and you're in an area where, like, you can tell when you're running into an area where there's low or bad signal, like the drive between here and Las Vegas, because the phone will have 30 or 40 minutes where there's no connectivity at all, and you know, well, that's that. Let's see. Apple also, along with the iOS 7 rollout, rolled out last supported version for old apps for old phones. So if you have, say, an iPhone 3GS that doesn't have iOS 7 support, and a bunch of developers are rolling out iOS 7 apps that are native and don't work with the older versions of the OS, you'll now be able to fire up your old phone, grab the newest version that phone's most current operating system supports. So theoretically, you have an iPhone 1. It supports, what, iOS 3? iOS 4? Say an iPhone 3G.
Okay.
Supports iOS 4. You want to use Twitter. Now, the current Twitter app only works with iOS 6 and newer. This will go out and say, okay, we're going to roll back 20 versions to the last version of Twitter that supported iOS 4 for your iPhone 3G. So that means if you have crappy old hardware, you'll still be able to get apps that work with systems. Now, there's nothing saying that the version of Twitter that's supported by the phone is actually still supported by Twitter, because like they may have updated their API, or Instagram may have updated their API. But at least you'll be able to get something for most of the stuff that you would
use. It's the best you're going to get.
It's kind of like it would be better if, and I know this will never happen, if people could choose what version. I mean, that website, oldversion.com, has been one of the greatest resources, because when people still use AIM, for example, and you wanted to do something like 4.3 before going to 5.0, and you didn't want to get the big changes, or even something like Skype, you know, just go to oldversion.com and download the old application.
This is one of the problems with the App Store model, right? You know, when you cede the ability to control what's installed on your machine and say, hey, I want Apple or Microsoft or Google or whoever to manage that stuff for me, then, yeah, it's a little bit more convenient. But you also lose the ability if, say, Twitter rolls out a horrible blue line in the version of their app that they released today that everybody hates and it annoys them.
How long can you really
roll back?
You can't really hold out.
It depends on the app. Like, Flickr's API hasn't changed in 10 years. So if you have a Flickr app from 2002 that you really like, you could keep using that. You could have used that constantly for the last 12 years.
Fueling websites, reporting on app change logs in perpetuity.
Yeah. I mean, I am at a point where I'm perfectly comfortable ceding my ability to run old versions of shit in favor of not having to ever think about that again.
That is the old person's way of
thinking. That is an old person's way of thinking. I have more important shit going on.
Do you have some examples of apps that you held out on for a really long time and then just finally was like, ugh?
I used what's the Twitter app based on? Tweety. I used Tweety until I switched straight from Tweety to Tweetbot. I think I used the official Twitter app for maybe a couple of weeks, and then Tweetbot came out. I was like, this is amazing.
You mean Tweety?
I used Tweety. Then I switched to the Twitter-fied version of Tweety that Twitter official released for a little while, and then Tweetbot came out, and it fixed the shit that I didn't like about Tweety or Twitter. The official this is getting really confusing.
Twitter Tweety.
I used Tweety. Then I used Twitter's version of Tweety. Then I used Tweetbot because it was more like Tweety than Twitter's version of Tweety was.
Got it. Perfectly simple. Got it.
Makes perfect sense. I think that's a great feature. I think Google should do the same thing for people who have old versions because they have a lot of people. I mean, the number of people using Froyo and other older versions of Android are a lot lower. And I think that developers are actually better at supporting older versions of phones and OSs on Google and have a mechanism for that. So maybe it's not even an issue for them. If Google wants to twist the knife, what they would do now is let people download whatever version of an app they wanted. That would be great. And then the last thing is that there are tons of, like, boatloads of apps getting iOS 7 updates today.
And have been for a while.
Some of them have kind of stealthed out. You'll see an icon change here and there. Like, the YouTube icon got real flat last week for no reason that we could tell.
Chrome, I think, also.
I think I've seen two Chrome updates in the last few days because they had a bug or something.
Somebody, I think, was it Dropbox, put out an update last week, and they were like, you better download this before iOS 7 comes out or bad stuff's going to happen.
Oh, really?
I can't remember if it was Dropbox or Flickr.
I don't think it was Flickr.
I feel like it was Dropbox, but sure.
Oh, it could have been the Blizzard Authenticator.
It might have been Google Drive.
I don't
use Blizzard Authenticator. Okay. So.
Anyway. I've been enjoying that because I have iOS 7 on my phones and tablets. So the apps just update automatically. If you don't want to update your apps automatically, this is the number one question we've gotten after posting that iOS 7 quick look. All you have to do is go into the settings app, go to iTunes and App Store settings. And then there's a thing that says, do you want to update downloads, update apps automatically? And you just flip that to no, and you will have to manually update your apps just like you used to. So there you go. That's all the iOS 7 stuff I think we're going to talk about. Cellular download cap.
Yes. Before today, if you want to update or download an app over your cellular connection, regardless of your data plan, it would be 50 megs max. Otherwise, you get a warning, go on Wi-Fi. Now it's 100 megs.
It wasn't a warning. It was a stop. It would prohibit you.
Yes.
It annoys me that there's a cap, although I do like that. Like, I would be fine if there was a warning as long as it said, hey, this is 2.1 gigs. You probably shouldn't download this, but if you really want to, you can.
Sometimes you really want to.
Yeah, sometimes you really need to.
It should be like the optional thing they used to have on iPods where you could hard cap your volume level.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, if you want to blow your ears out, you can just raise this to 100%, or you could leave it at 80.
Or I just then switch my SIM card over to my Android phone, turn on Wi-Fi hotspot, and then the iPhone thinks it's on Wi-Fi, and then I'm still using my data
plan. I've done that before. Yeah.
Take that, Apple and AT&T/Verizon.
I have 8 gigs. I download whatever I want. I could download the planets if I want to. I'm going to download the elements right now.
The planets, like the music?
No. The 2.1 gig electronic book with all the videos and stuff.
What's the biggest app?
The biggest thing I've ever seen is like 6 gigs, which was XCOM.
Wow.
Yeah.
I want to know what the biggest app is. I don't care what the most expensive one
is.
I want to know the biggest size app is.
The largest?
Yes.
Infinity Blade 3, speaking of big apps, is out today. Have you played iOS?
No. I'm kind of...
I think it's free.
I haven't played any of them.
Oh. The first one was okay.
First one looked great. The second one was way more complicated than I think it needed to
be. The second one was a much better game than the first one.
And then I don't know about the third one.
Well, maybe we'll visit it at some point in the future. iPhone 5S reviews are out.
A bunch of people got iPhone 5 reviews. Yep. If you're listening to this on Thursday and deciding
iPhone 5 reviews.
Okay, so Anand got one.
Yeah. Jim Dalrymple
did get one, although I increasingly care less about his opinion.
Gruber.
John Gruber did get a pink one. I don't think Marco got one.
He got a pink.
Gruber got a pink iPhone, a 5SE.
Oh, but he got a 5S too, didn't he?
Yeah, he got a gold 5.
Yeah, okay.
5S. I believe Wired got one. I'm pretty sure The Verge got one.
I don't think The Verge posted a review yet.
Good. Great for them. They're spending their time with it.
Mossberg and Pogue got one.
Mossberg and Pogue both did get one.
Did Engadget get one? I didn't notice that.
I don't know.
Ours didn't get one this time.
Regardless.
Yes.
The point is iPhone 5S you couldn't pre-order, which is, I think, a good thing. Good and bad thing.
Engadget got both.
Bad because for people like Gary who don't want to wait in lines, pre-ordering would have been convenient, even though Gary's actually not getting one.
So he says.
Buying one. So I checked him this morning. His position's unchanged.
I know. Ask him on Friday morning at, let's say, 4 a.m.
Good, because then it prevents people from making too hasty decisions for buying something they might not need. So the reviews...
I read all the reviews, at least all the ones that I saw.
And
I think Anand's was probably the best.
Well, most technical. If best, you mean by most technical.
Well, here's the thing. I looked at this as a technical update. Like the big thing that has changed is that there's a fingerprint sensor. I wanted to know how that worked for real human beings, which Anand is great at testing.
What is the? Let's go by all the changes. So fingerprint sensor, what's consensus?
The consensus was that it works much better than they expected and better than any fingerprint sensor that people have used. It even does things like if you touch just part of the fingerprint and it doesn't pick up the sense that doesn't register properly, then it will ask you after you type in your code to it kind of adds that information to the collection of data about your finger. So what Anand said is you can kind of graze it with the side of your finger and it'll just work. What he ended up doing most of the time was tapping the home button, leaving his finger there for a split second more than you normally would, and that was typically enough to unlock it, which sounds pretty rad, but not enough to upgrade your phone.
Well, and also the on the technical side, it's impressive and it works maybe better than previous biometric sensors, like on laptops, for example, your ThinkPads. But also from the experiential perspective, because it's integrated on the OS level, not having to type your passwords in, people have said in the week they've used this phone, that is something they've definitely noticed.
Well, you still have to type your password in for everything except for the initial login to the phone and buying stuff from the App Store or iTunes.
So
nothing else can hook into the fingerprint sensor.
So like websites,
yet.
You can.
Websites have nothing to do with it. Keychain seems to have nothing to do with it.
Buying apps, buying music, buying movies.
It's anything Apple ID, right?
Yeah. It's not even anything Apple ID because even Game Center people said didn't work.
Really?
Yeah. I think that over time that's going to change.
I'm absolutely sure it will. I think they're probably testing the waters given the fact that we've recently learned that they're in the pocket of the NSA and all that business. So people are a little skittish about things like fingerprints and personally identifiable information.
Okay.
But yeah, so the consensus on that is that it is better than expected. Of course, it's also important to note that everybody said when Siri came out, oh, this is much better than I expected. It actually kind of works. So
now when Siri came out, people were more like wowed and by the novelty of the funny things Siri could say.
It was definitely a novelty.
I think there's a pretty low bar for the fingerprint scanner. If it scans quickly and correctly most of the time...
I think it's more important whether it scans correctly when someone else's finger is on your phone as opposed to it getting your finger right. If it has too loose of a security,
you're worried about false positives more than false negatives.
Yes.
The other thing of note is it only stores 5 fingers. So as Anand said, he quickly hit. He picked both thumbs, both index fingers, because those are the buttons he's most likely to hit the home button with. And then he figured he'd save one finger for either a significant other, spouse, whatever, somebody else who might need to use the phone, or he'd figure out which finger is important.
I know what the next 2 million view YouTube video is. A dog tests the fingerprint sensor.
You want me to get the dog and the fingerprint sensor?
A dog tests the iPad is number one video.
Fair enough.
And the dog tests
still,
the iPhone 5S fingerprint sensor.
Woof. Woof. Okay.
Who doesn't love Chloe Bananas?
I love Chloe Bananas.
Okay. So after the fingerprint sensor...
I skipped the camera stuff and all the reviews. I'll be upfront about that because I was...
Even the software stuff.
Better low light.
I had to pick and choose what I was reading because I had a pretty limited time.
Okay. So yes, better low light,
which is every phone camera, every generation.
Yep. Yeah.
Better low light.
Bigger pixels.
The comparison photos were not night and night plus.
It's not the difference between 4S and 5.
The flash is very well received. The new flash. If you're a person who uses flash, and in some cases in the dark, you kind of have to use
flash. It might make the flash something you will want to use more often.
I don't think you'd want to, but you'd be less reluctant to use.
Most of the time when you use the flash on a phone camera, the resulting picture is garbage anyway because it's too blown out. So right.
I don't think the intensity changed. It's just the color.
So the place I like to use flash, and the only place I really regularly use flash, is if I'm doing something dumb like shooting somebody in front of a sunset where you're going to have a super dark person and it's too much of a brightness gap to use
mirrors,
HDR.
Right?
I mean, I guess I could carry around like a 5-foot mirror with me everywhere I go.
And
so I can do a full body reflection and have a couple of grips or best boys or whatever those people are called. But in reality,
you can shoot a movie with your iPhone.
Yeah. In reality, I hit the flash button so that I hopefully can see whose face it is standing in front of the sun. Like if it works in that situation, I'm stoked.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think the most notable thing about the camera stuff is in the software. It's in the burst mode.
Okay.
And everyone and all the reviews love the burst mode, especially how fast it processes the images and the way it shows you the images. And it really calls attention to the iPhone's big advantage over dedicated cameras, even point-and-shoots, which have very what camera makers think is consumer-friendly interfaces, and to more extent DSLRs, which don't have very consumer-friendly interfaces, the ability to review photos very quickly and pick out the ones and make that LCD on the back attached to your camera, whether it's DSLR or a smartphone, a useful tool.
Like a light box, something a photographer would use.
Something to maybe not develop the photos in, but at least to review photos more effectively and efficiently.
Yeah.
I think
the software
that people
stuff
are right.
seem to work? Like the face, the smile detection, all that stuff seemed like it was pretty good.
I think that some people called out that they wouldn't be surprised if DSLR makers put this type of software in their cameras in the future. I mean, they already have touchscreens and a way to go through your burst mode on your... on your DSLR, all those photos. I mean, you just need to read those photos quicker.
That's really optimistic on DSLR manufacturers' ability to make software that doesn't suck.
I don't think it's a software problem. It's a cost problem. It's about putting
a
real processor and better, more memory buffer.
Okay. The other big component is performance. Screen seems like it's more or less the same. I'm trying to think of anything else that's changed. Other than that, the other big change is A7. This is where Anand did the deep dive and kind of figured out what makes that processor tick and got into the real specifics about the difference between, you know, Apple's strategy with A6 and A7 and NVIDIA and Samsung and Qualcomm strategies with their ARM-based chips. And it was really fascinating. I had read that stuff before and it hadn't stuck, I guess. But you know, Apple has licensed ARM at an instruction level rather than at a core level. So they're now building...
You bet, at an architecture level as opposed to a design level.
Yeah, when I say instruction, I mean they're licensing ARM instructions as if somebody was licensing the x86 instruction set, not licensing. I mean, Intel doesn't do this, so it's not a good analogy. But they basically are taking the next set of ARM instructions, the 64-bit set, and have V8. Built a custom processor that runs that, not using one of the ARM stock designs, which is what Samsung, Qualcomm, NVIDIA, and the other OEMs
do. When people and mostly Android sites write about ARM chipsets from Samsung, Qualcomm, and NVIDIA, and talk about things like Cortex A9, A15. These are designs. These are die designs and chip design, or not maybe not die designs, but they are ARM core designs done by ARM themselves.
It seems like the analog is if you want to use an analog from the PC space, I think graphics cards are a fairly safe one, because it's as if they're taking a reference design from NVIDIA for a graphics card and then tweaking it slightly and putting that out with a different brand on it and calling it there.
But they're also putting their own graphics cores.
I mean, right. There's other stuff that goes into it.
And what Apple's doing is not doing that.
Building it from the ground up.
Which I think is super exciting, and I don't really care that much about the 5S, but what this means for phone processors in 2 years.
And more importantly, well, tablets,
I
think.
It's a huge R&D expense
to
do that. And you need to have basically an engineering team that a lot of those other chip makers, I mean, Texas Instruments doesn't even do it anymore, and they usually just license the A9s to sign something. And this is where designing software and hardware work together.
Yeah. So
A7 is just a dual core 1.3 gigahertz.
Yeah,
chip.
That's it. Anand got into, like, if you want to know the nitty gritty, then read Anand's article. It's great. It's like it's relatively short for an Anand Tech article. It is very interesting reading if you're into nitty gritty of how CPUs work on phones. I was very skeptical of Apple's claim that they were doubling performance of the iPhone 5 with this new processor just by going to 64-bit. And Anand makes a good case that explains that them saying, hey, it's 64-bit, it's probably shorthand, but there's other stuff that comes along with that 64-bit instruction set that makes the performance believable. And then he shows the performance with benchmarks, breaks down which graphics core they're using, all that kind of stuff.
In fact, going to 64-bit is the least important part of what they changed.
Yeah, the register stuff that comes with the A8 extension or instruction set seems to be the big deal. But it was just read the article. It's really good. M7, this is the coprocessor that does the gyroscope motion, mm-hmm. all that stuff. Anand, from what he said in his review, it seemed like the phone is now much more aware of its state, like whether it's in your pocket, whether it's in the car. He said when he was using Apple Maps to do directions, he jumped out of a car, started walking, and the directions automatically shifted from car directions to walking directions.
That's pretty cool.
Which sounded magical. Like, no, I'm not being sarcastic or mean. It sounded really crazy. That's pretty much it. I mean, there was some speculation. He said that, assuming that there's no big process change in that versus the main CPU, there's no reason it couldn't be integrated unless they wanted to keep it as a standalone product for potential use in other devices like, you know, watches.
That's kind of data extrapolation that people don't really think about that would definitely go well in a watch.
Yeah, that could be the watch's entire processor with a slower ARM core attached. So, yeah, I thought that was really interesting. Reviews seem really good for an interim phone. I still don't think that if I were a normal person and I had an iPhone 5, I would consider spending off-contract money to buy one of these phones.
What about on-contract money?
If I was a 4S user and was looking for an upgrade?
Let's say if you were an iPhone 5 user and you had the opportunity for the on-contract pricing.
If I had an iPhone 5, it would be very difficult to upgrade. Like, here's the thing. The way I use my phone, the extra power is nice but not vital. The way I use my tablet, I would upgrade in a second. Like, if I could get an A7 powered iPad mini, I would do that in a heartbeat.
That's not going to happen for another year.
We have no way of knowing. But
another year.
Yeah.
What do you think a resale value on iPhone 5s is?
I would say that it's probably about the same as it always is, right? $200 off, $300 off.
Well, if the alternative is now that the 5C is available also.
Yeah.
And that has a better LTE antenna.
If you haven't, if you want to sell your iPhone 5 and you haven't upgraded to 7 yet, go get the jailbreak stuff done for it, and that increases its value dramatically, right?
Yeah, I guess. I think that now that it's on most of the networks, it's
less of an issue, I guess. Yeah. Let's see. The last thing is that there's massive rumors that there's going to be a massive shortage of the A7 chips for iPhone 5S. So there you go. Anything else about Apple stuff? Are we Appled out? Have we peaked? Peaked Apple?
I maintain.
Yes, Norm.
That we're probably going to get an iPhone 5S to test, not a 5C. 5C is much less interesting.
The 5C is just less interesting because the reviews back this up. It is pretty much iPhone 5 hardware with the better camera, and that's pretty much it. A different case, different shell. So cosmetic change to the 5, nothing else.
I maintain that for the iPhone 5S, gold.
You think gold?
I think that I want to know what that experience is.
I'm interested in slate gray.
So your whole lifestyle will shift around.
No, I want to know what the reaction
Norm,
is.
Norm, you're just saying that because I'm the one doing the iPhone 5S test, and you want me to get a dumb gold iPhone.
Trade it in. Trade it in 30 days. Within 30 days.
Yeah, you know how that. You know the likelihood of me doing that.
You just traded your phone in.
I did just trade my phone in. It was a good move. It was time.
Get the gold. I want to see the gold.
I don't think you can trade colors, though.
Why couldn't you?
I don't think they'll let you exchange colors without a fee. Anyway. We'll see. We'll see what colors are available if I get in line on Friday morning.
Don't wuss out.
I don't know that that's going to happen because we'll be not in this city, and I don't know if I want to go sit on the street in New York in September to get a new iPhone on Friday morning. But anyway.
Triforce does it. Come on.
They're much better than us. Maybe I'll task rabbit somebody to go sit in line and then just get up at 6 and walk down. That's the smart thing to do. Voyager 1 has left the solar system. No, it's not V'ger.
Not yet.
I think
not
V'ger yet. Was Voyager 2, wasn't it?
I think it was Voyager.
Was it just Voyager 1?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was just a while, a few hundred years.
And it wasn't the one that the Klingons shot down completely impossibly at the beginning of Star Trek 6. That was Pioneer 10.
I don't remember.
You never watched Star Trek 6?
No, I did, but
it opens with Kahl? Is that the Klingon? What's the captain's
Kang?
Name?
No, not...
Kang is...
I gotta get this right.
Yeah, okay. It's...
Christopher Plummer.
Yeah, it is Christopher Plummer. Or Captain Von Trapp, as you may remember him
it's
from
Chang.
Sound of Music. Chang. But that's it. That's pretty much it. We've left the magnetic influence of the sphere of the sun with Voyager. It's still inside the solar system. It hasn't passed through the Oort cloud or any of that stuff yet. That will be many more years. But the sun no longer touches Voyager, as I understand it. It's still sending data back. There's still instruments that work and are detecting things like particle movement. The way NASA discovered that this happened was really neat, I thought. I don't know if you guys read the story, but apparently there was a burst of plasma that was ejected from the sun that happened to be going in the right direction. And from that, they were able to tell, hey, something's changed. And it took
because
they're still receiving data from both the radio and from the sensors on the probe. So yeah, Voyager. We launched it in 1978 or 77, something like that. It's amazing. The future.
The past.
Well, it's still the future out there.
The past is so, 40 years went by since we did the Apollo missions.
43.
And
42, 44. Math
that's
is hard.
Not a lot of time.
Well, not cosmically speaking.
No. But it feels like it's been a lot of time because back then NASA engineers were still using telegrams.
Well, yeah. I mean, NASA used a lot of low-tech stuff over the years. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, we'll talk about that.
Okay. Bing has a new logo, and they're beta testing they're previewing a new homepage design.
Do you think their logo, the new Bing logo, is better or worse as a redesign than Yahoo's new logo?
It's difficult for me to say because I don't think I remember what Bing's logo looked like before.
Talking about this right after Voyager leaving the solar system really puts in perspective how unimportant Bing's logo is.
Good.
Moving on.
by design.
Moving on.
Or just how trite this podcast is.
We're just all over the place this week.
Wow, there's a whole subsection for this talking point too.
I didn't want to forget that the homepage is now responsive.
We can talk about shading
down
and
on
the era of
tablets
design.
And phones.
For some people, that's life.
Backgrounds with like fish on them and nature and stuff. That's what Bing's all about.
Yeah, Bing's turtles. About making search an app. I don't know what Bing's about. I don't really like the new design, the new logo, but that doesn't really mean anything because I can't remember the last time I used Bing regularly. So you know, there you go.
But Bing also will power Cortana.
Oh, we didn't put Cortana on the list. Should we talk about Cortana?
I really hope that they actually call her Cortana.
What is Cortana, Wes Fenlon?
Well, Cortana is originally an AI character from Halo, who is like infinitely knowledgeable computer, basically, who manifests as her like hologram is...
It's
like
the naked lady hologram from Halo?
Naked purple lady, yeah. Okay. And Microsoft is working on their kind of Siri personal assistant data knowledge database system that is going to come out who knows when. They kind of...
3 years later than it should have?
They have said, we're not going to release it until it does something groundbreaking, right? So they're saying it's not going to be just Siri for Windows Phone. Whether or not it actually ends up being dramatically better, you know, who knows? But the idea of it is that they're tying together this like knowledge engine that they have behind Bing to correlate just billions of pieces of information so that, you know, the search engine knows who people are and their birthdays and what sports are and, you know, how just the interrelationships between tons and tons of different things. So
It's interesting. We make fun of Bing a lot, but we shouldn't because it's kind of neat. And it actually puts Microsoft in a much better position than Apple when it comes to that kind of information. Because, you know, Google, the reason Google now is better than Siri is that Google has, you know, not infinite, but close to infinite data on everything that people do on the internet. So they can combine voice input with, you know, the knowledge that when most of the time when somebody in San Francisco says van, they're looking for van, something on Van Ness Avenue, and they know that that's a true state. I don't know if that's actually a true state, but that's the first example I could come up with. You know, Bing gives Microsoft even with 15% market share, whatever they have, it gives them the same kind of data at a massive scale.
And guess what?
And Apple doesn't have that.
And guess what? Because Bing is a search engine that powers Siri search.
Yeah.
All the Apple user stuff is going to be at Microsoft.
Is Bing powered Siri search now? Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't know that.
Even if you do Siri on iOS 7,
yeah.
The search results, as opposed to say, would you like me to search the web? It will pull stuff from Bing.
So that's why, and that's not configurable, I assume.
No.
So that's why it knows what Twitter is and stuff like that, because Bing has deals with Twitter.
So my hope is that if Cortana actually comes out as a user-facing product and is called Cortana for real, that they get Jen Taylor, who I believe is a voice actress, to do the Siri voice.
Don't you think?
Here's why I think that Microsoft won't do it.
I have a theory about this too. Go ahead, Norm.
I think they won't do it because the expectation is going to be way too high, and even though it's on paper a brilliant cross branding synergetic move,
that sounds exactly like the kind of thing Microsoft would do so far.
I think that you coming with all the baggage of what people have come to expect from the persona of Cortana in the Halo games,
she's a little sassy.
Users are only going to be disappointed.
So given where Cortana is in the Halo fiction right now, Halo 4 spoilers.
So you're coming at it from a less technical experiential thing and more a
Cortana be crazy
canon thing.
Yeah.
Canonical fiction.
Right. 343 has made Cortana crazy.
She's going to be...
That's not what you want in your pocket computer.
She's going to be in the next game.
Of course.
In some form or another.
Right. She's going to be the villain. She's Chodan.
No.
Have it all rolls Halo around. 4? Thanks.
Sorry. I warned people there are going to be spoilers.
You didn't really spoil anything.
That's true. It starts in the first 3 minutes of the game.
I don't think it's going to actually happen, but
no.
I think the level of personality that would have compared to the existing robot voices you talk to would be pretty cool.
what do you think they would use if they're not going to call it Cortana when it comes out? What is Microsoft's Microsoft Synergy, Microsoft Voice,
Lady Bing,
Microsoft Ask?
Are they going to bring Jeeves back?
Maybe they don't own Jeeves. Jeeves is still out there.
I know, but,
answering questions. But if they freelance
just,
now,
they just buy Ask, which is yeah. Is that owned by like Lycos or something? Who owns?
I don't know who owns Ask. I think Ask owns Ask. Yeah.
Still just Ask.
Yeah,
they could probably pick that up for a little less than Skype cost them.
Hey guys, did you know that Voyager left the solar system this week? You want to take another stab at that one, or are we going to move on? Okay. iPhone 5C is on pre-order. Oh, okay.
Oh, nothing. Something else on this list. Phone blocks.
Phone blocks. We talked about phone blocks.
Nope.
No. I mean, we talked about phone blocks on the site.
Wes wrote about phone blocks yes. on the site. How many
Explain
views does that video
blocks.
Have now? So a video came out late last week, that after like 2 days got 7 or 8 million views and has only climbed since then.
But what the video is of a modular phone system so that in theory you could use configurable modules and add the stuff that you want to your phone. So if you want to have a good camera, you could put an extra big camera module in. That's great. If you want to have 7-day battery, you could not have very much storage and not have a fast processor, but have an enormous battery and just keep snapping these little bricks into the back of a phone. Now, I think the video got a crazy number of views because it speaks to what people want from their phone. Everybody wants the phone that they want.
It's so idealistic in a... It's the kind of video you can rally behind from a like, yeah, we shouldn't be creating all this waste and we should get all these like companies to work together and we can do it.
And that's so surprising because like world peace videos. We'll see you in New York, Joey. We'll see you in New York. Are you okay? Do you need to take anything? Okay. It's hilarious that the video that people rally behind isn't any, you know, for like peace in Syria. It's for a phone that's easier to upgrade.
So in addition to writing about Stephen Wolfram's 12-year-old kid, Wes took these guys down a peg.
I mean, a little bit. I talked to people from Adafruit, just kind of asked them some general questions like, you know, how realistic is it to have every component need to be, you know, encased in its own plastic? How would there be like speed or performance issues with the way they would plug
that 4-pin
you know,
bus that
yeah,
they showed
pin
yeah.
thing. And I mean, their general opinion is like, yeah, it would cost more to make parts this way. There would be concerns about getting, you know, water or grit in there or whatever, but presumably that's something you would test for when you were, you know, designing, manufacturing it. Their opinion was, yeah, I mean, it could work.
And there also, that research led you to believe that some people might actually be working on something similar?
There are some modular phone designs and computer designs and stuff. They're kind of like that. They're much more on the like open source, you have to build everything yourself level. And those kind of show that the gap between this thing being a great idea and a real thing is where you find like the clunkiness of the phone and the manufacturing considerations of getting, you know, Samsung and whoever, LG, who make, you know, these parts to make different parts and things that would potentially hurt their sales of their existing phones or just cost them more money, and what's the incentive for them to do it?
Well, I got a tablet I want to sell you. It's called the Crunch Pad.
Okay, so the thing about this video is it looks like a phone from the future, kind of. You know, if there's a world where there's fast wireless communication between modules and all that thing has to do is provide power to each of the components, then it, like that could conceivably work. But we're not there yet. Those specs aren't even on the horizon or close to ratification or anything like that. So, you know,
I can guarantee some phone company out there, mobile company, is working on something that will work poorly, but that captures the essence, the spirit of this design because can tout, will want to tout that they've done it.
We've made phone blocks real.
And I think the interesting / kind of tragic element of it is if this actually became a real thing, that the millions of people who
have watched the video and given it a thumbs up. And, you know, so the idea at the end of it on like October 29th or something, he's like, you know, we're going to have a social blast day where everybody gets on their social networks at once and rallies and says, yeah, we want this phone. And I don't know how many people will end up doing that. Certainly fewer people than, you know, the 12 million or whatever who have watched the video. But the number of people out of that group who would actually buy this phone when it ends up to being twice as thick and nowhere near the performance quality.
And you have to do some soldering
of their
yourself.
iPhone, or I mean, even if it came out of the box working, it's going to be a clunker compared to the, you know, the aluminum body of the phone that, you know, HTC or Apple makes that is like this incredibly professionally milled, well, like thin as they can possibly make it device that you can use for 2 years and then just throw it away and it's not your problem. You don't have to live with this fat phone for 5 years or
you know,
whatever.
Like the PC metaphor comes back here because I'm perfectly happy. Like I could buy an iMac and put it on my desk at home and have a computer that's good enough for most of the stuff that I do. But I like building PCs because then I have a sense of ownership over it and I have the opportunity to upgrade in a kind of more sporadic manner than I would rather than having to wholesale replace the thing every 2 or 3 years. And it's bigger and like it is in a bigger, clunkier case than it would be if I bought an all-in-one from Dell or HP or Lenovo.
But you're also not putting your pocket all day.
Yeah, I'm not putting my pocket all day.
I don't think that works as a comparison just because you're putting the tower just out of the way.
But as the components that go into the phones get smaller and smaller and require less power, and as progress marches inevitably on, like it isn't a thing that maybe makes sense right now, but in 5 years it could make perfect sense.
Maybe in 5 years, phone blocks, the concept will get to the size and weight that a smartphone is now, but people who are using phones pre-made will be on their Hollow phones,
right? You have it implanted in your hand. Yeah. You hold your finger up
and laughing,
Disney bone
laughing
conduction.
At the chuds holding 5-inch phones and their bulky 4-inch phones, 100-gram phones in their hands.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, who knows? It's okay to dream. Don't you know? But yeah, don't expect to buy this next year. Is kind of where I went.
Yeah, I think
what I took away.
I think it's a great idea, but I think when the number of people who would rally behind it and then saw what the actual product and would end up being right now, those people would look at the smartphone they have and say, you know, I really like that. I can upgrade this.
Solving poverty is a great idea.
Yeah.
It's a better idea.
Imagine a world. GTA 5 came out on Tuesday and sold $800 million worth of copies in 24 hours.
Sold or shipped? Did they
clarify?
I don't know.
The headline I saw on Kotaku or wherever I got this from said sold.
Okay.
I can go fact check that.
Doesn't tell me whether that's a...
They sold them to somebody, whether it was retailers or people.
So the headline on Kotaku was, yep, Grand Theft Auto 5 is making a blank, 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 blank load of money. $800 million. That's the first day sell-through number for Grand Theft Auto 5. And... Take-Two says, consumers gathered around the world in anticipation to be among the first to experience blah, 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 blah. It's a press release. I feel dirty now for regurgitating this.
I haven't kept up with it, but what's the launch day numbers for the past 3 Call of Duty games?
Well, I think the $800 million number for GTA 5 is not record-breaking, is what I've read.
I'm looking up the COD Blobs 2 launch day numbers.
What do you think was the best, fastest selling COD Blobs?
Oh, it had to be 2.
It was 2.
It's always the most recent one.
COD Blobs 2?
COD Blobs. Yeah, the fastest selling Call of Duty is always the most recent one.
Really?
I think Black Ops never gone 2 down? Sold better than Modern Warfare 3 did.
Yeah, if that goes down, then...
Which was
then
newer.
Guess who's getting... No.
I think Modern Warfare 3 was a dip after Black Ops 2.
I thought Modern Warfare 3 and then was after COD Blobs 2. COD Blobs 2 is after Modern Warfare 3.
I don't believe so, but whatever.
It's a trilogy. Modern Warfare trilogy.
Don't actually care. Just curious how 1v1 those stack up.
I'm looking. It doesn't say on Wikipedia right off.
None of us here have played GTA 5?
Nope. It had grossed $500 million 20 hours on sale. Oh, that's declassified.
And
this might be Black Ops 2.
the best GTA?
Sure.
Oh, okay, so here it is. Within 24 hours of going on sale, Black Ops 2 had grossed over $500 million, beating 2011's Modern Warfare 3 to become the biggest entertainment launch of all time. Until September 2013, when Take-Two announced that Grand Theft Auto 5 had grossed $800 million in its first day of release.
So that's a pretty big gap.
It's a big gap.
But it's the difference
like
between
40% jump.
A 4 or 5 year gap and
five years for GTA 4.
I mean, GTA has had like major DLC releases, but obviously those don't make nearly as much money.
Yeah. So, I'm interested. I'm not a huge GTA fan. I find those games kind of tedious sometimes.
I had a lot of good times with 3 and 4.
I loved 3.
3 and Vice City.
Loved 3.
San Andreas is a great game.
When Jeff was talking about on the Bombcast this week, picking up hitchhikers and delivering them to a cult as a mission side type, suddenly I'm back in, ready to go. So, I don't know. We'll see. Maybe I'll play GTA 5 if I have time sometime.
I think a weird thing has happened with the Grand Theft Auto series where a lot of people, there's been this strange backlash against it since the fourth one came out. And I think people have weirdly attributed the flaws of GTA 4 to all of the previous games, which I don't think is... from a gameplay perspective, they're similar, but in terms of tone and narrative, I feel like 3, Vice City, and San Andreas are way different than GTA 4, but people kind of just lump them all together in the same way. And I think a lot of it is just this crazy backlash to all of the hype and review stuff that came out with GTA 4, calling it an Oscar-winning story and all this crap that was not...
Well, and there's always a weird dichotomy in 4 where you had this serious story and a really relatable character who had personal flaws and challenges, and then also happened to be just an inveterate killing machine the moment he got behind a wheel of a car or ran out in the city. So,
yeah, and I don't think the older games had that tonal issue.
They were cartoons.
Really the same way.
Yeah. You know what my favorite part of Saints Row 4 is?
What's your favorite part of Saints Row 4, Norm?
Not having to drive cars.
Yeah, I don't know that I want to get back in cars. But everybody said, you get in the cars, it's okay. They also added a cover lock system, which I'm kind of interested in seeing how that works in GTA 5.
There was cover in 4.
Yeah, I know, but like it seems like they pulled a lot of the stuff
from
Max
Payne
3.
Are there 9 stances of vertical height from prone to standing?
I do not know about 9 stances.
No, there are not.
Where are you getting that from?
Arma 3.
Are you playing Arma 3, Norm?
Yes. 9 stances.
Okay, so what are your stances? Prone?
Prone. And then like
up on your elbows,
and then
army crawl, knees,
every position you can have between
doggy
from prone
downward facing
to
plank
to standing up
tree
and two degrees of leaning on each side.
Just 2 degrees of lean. Do you have a track IR, Norm?
No.
Does anyone in your house have a track IR?
I do not believe so.
Hmm. Has anyone in your house considered purchasing a track IR?
Probably not.
No.
Okay. I know there's a lot of Arma that gets played over there. I always see Evan playing Arma.
GTA 5 is going to be a great PC game.
That's the optimism, but I like it.
Yeah.
It's just Red Dead Redemption was a great PC game.
I don't think there was ever any no leaks or anything that made Red Dead look like it was going to come out on PC. It should have, because they put GTA 4 out on PC.
LA Noir and
it's weird that it
everything
never happened.
Else. Yeah.
But I think there have been plenty of leaks for GTA 5 that make it look like it is already well on its way to being on the PC, plus the amount of time and money they put into that game, plus the fact that there will almost certainly be PS4 and Xbox One versions a year from now when they do the Game of the Year or Greatest Hits.
Wow, how much money do you think, if they sold $800 million in the first 24 hours worth of the game... this is potentially a $2 billion game.
It could be. Well, I mean, it's also reportedly the most expensive game ever developed.
At how much? $200
million? $200 million, I think,
is the
number
I heard. That 10 years ago would have been the most expensive movie ever made.
Well,
but now, half blockbusters are $150 and above.
But the console manufacturers take their bit. It's an interesting proposition. I guess it's good. People like it.
But it sounds like it's really stretching the absolute limits of what those consoles can handle.
The thing I've heard is that they perform surprisingly well, especially given the way Saints Row 4 performed on Xbox and stuff like that.
Do you think people are going to double dip?
You mean buy Xbox 360 and then update next year for Game of the Year, mm-hmm, on Xbox One or PS4?
Mm-hmm. Plenty of people will.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me, especially if they roll out some new content stuff that's only on those platforms.
Not 800 million worth, but sure.
Well, the other thing that I don't think we've talked about that they announced, I want to say Gamescom or maybe just after Gamescom, is that some of the publishers for some games, I believe, are allowing you to like roll up your Xbox 360 version of Xbox and Xbox One into an Xbox One game for like $10. So if you have,
including Activision, EA,
I think it's Ghosts is the one that I always heard cited.
It's
for
a pretty
this.
Limited number of games. That yeah, will, you know, it'll be. It's basically like Call of Duty, Madden, you know, a couple other.
It's the kind of stuff you play
probably.
Online, is what it seems like.
But
yeah, which I mean, that's good. That's fair, right? I'd pay $10 to get the next up version of. If I bought Ghost for 360, I would pay $10 to get the Xbox One version.
Does that take away your
ability
to play it on the last generation console?
I can't imagine how. If you have the disc, you may lose the ability to play online. But I don't even think they would take. I mean, it doesn't make sense for them to take that away because it's still tied to your account. So you're tying it like you, it would just be like it would be like having backwards compatibility on the console, but there is no backwards compatibility on the console. Ouya. Ouya had this thing. We didn't even talk about it. It was called Free the Games. They
kind of a fuck up.
They fucked up. I mean,
I've never heard of this. What is Free the Games?
It seems like a good idea. What they said is, hey, if you have a game on Kickstarter and you agree to make it Ouya exclusive for a fixed period of time, which I believe was 6 months, then we will match your Kickstarter donations. So if you are an indie developer and you have an idea for a game, in exchange for 6 months exclusivity on our window, we'll match all the money you raise on Kickstarter, assuming your Kickstarter is funded successfully. It's a great idea, right? Gets people to have, gets good Ouya exclusives, cool indie stuff, supports the indie community. What could possibly go wrong?
Just, yeah, hearing that sentence,
yeah,
you immediately realize how you could game this.
How would you game this, Norman Chen?
Well, just create a Kickstarter and set a very high Kickstarter goal and then mm-hmm. promise to give it Ouya exclusivity.
And make your game not actually real or kind
or
of
you make
bullshit.
Or make a crappy game.
Yeah. So what has happened?
Were there any restrictions to this?
Not as
not
such.
Enough. Yeah.
Yeah. So what happened, the most recent outrage from the community I saw was about a person who launched a Kickstarter, raised $50,000 from his dad, broke it up into 5 10-grand chunks, had friends kickstarted through proxies, supporting his own thing, and then was like, hey, Ouya, I'm ready for my money, yo. And people flipped out. Rightly so.
Wow. And what has Ouya's response been?
Ouya's response has been to change the Free the Games plan so that, let's say, hopefully it won't be quite as gameable.
And they can, well, one of the things they added in is them being able to just say, fuck you.
Yeah, we're not going to do this with anything. We're going to vet it to make sure it looks passes the sniff test.
It's kind of like the Pepsi commercial, the guy wanted the Harrier.
The Harrier? Yeah, that was a great
one. I think
one.
He deserved the Harrier.
I don't think private citizens should be allowed to have Harriers.
Well, I think that
I believe in it. I believe, this might be controversial, Norm. I believe in Harrier control.
As well you should, Harrier control.
Do you? Yeah. Have you ever saved up caps or anything like that?
No, and with the Pepsi Harrier thing, if you guys don't know what I'm talking about.
That's probably good information.
There was
to
a
have.
Commercial that Pepsi ran with Pepsi Point. I'm pretty sure it was Pepsi.
It was definitely Pepsi, and you ripped
Pepsi points.
You saved bottle caps. I think you ripped the box top off of like 12 packs and cases.
And as you accumulated points, you could redeem them for prizes.
Yeah.
But as many of these sweepstakes type contests go, legally you had to give consumers an option to purchase points.
Thanks, Delaware.
And so there was option also to purchase a point. I believe it was $1 a point or something.
No, it was nowhere near that much. It was a tenth of a cent a point or something like
no,
that.
No,
it was still, he still had to write a massive check.
Right. And in the commercial at the end, a kid, redeems like 1 million points or 100 million points or whatever, a large sum of points. I think it was 1 million points, maybe more than that. And gets a Harrier and like in the commercial flies away.
7 million Pepsi points.
How many dollars per point? Was it?
So it's 10 cents a point.
So only $700,000 really required to redeem the Harrier. Anyone doing math?
Yeah, I would. That's a great deal for a
and
Harrier.
Someone, but no one would have the balls, right?
So
in the, before the days of crowdfunding or anything, a dude had to go door to door or go to the bank. I wanted to get a $700,000 loan. Why? So I could receive them for a Harrier.
So
with Pepsi, he paid for the points.
No, here's what he did.
I really want it to be that and not that he was just rich.
His name was John Leonard. He sued PepsiCo in an effort to enforce an offer to redeem 7 million Pepsi points for an AV-8 Harrier 2 jump jet because of the commercial. The plaintiff did not collect 7 million Pepsi points, which probably there weren't 7 million Pepsi points in circulation, if I had to guess. But
there had to be.
You're right. But he sent a certified check for $708.50 as permitted by the contest rules.
A dollar.
He had 15 points that he'd collected by drinking Pepsi.
So he's drinking, and on his 15 drinks, Pepsi, he drinks, wait a minute.
he drinks 50 Pepsi. Really? He's like, oh my God, I can't drink any more Pepsi.
Or,
this is terrible.
Why am I doing this?
Like, oh my God, Pepsi. Not any more Pepsi.
He was probably like 10 mixed drinks in when he just
gave
had
him
this
inspiration.
Brilliant idea.
Yeah.
Hey man, I got a whole case of Pepsi here. We're 15 points away.
And so a $700,000 certified check.
That's cash.
That is. And he lost the court battle. The judge ruled that any reasonable person would know based on the commercial that it was not serious. And I think that in the commercial at the very end, there was like fine print that says you can't actually win the Harrier. Or maybe not. Maybe that's why there has to be fine print.
No. So it was found that the advertisement featuring the jet did not constitute an offer under the restatement second of contracts. The court found that even if the advertisement had been an offer, no reasonable person could have believed that the company seriously intended to convey a jet worth roughly $23 million for $700,000.
Why not?
That it was mere puffery, which I assume is a legal term. The value of the alleged contract meant that it fell under the provisions of the statute of frauds, but the statute's requirements for written agreement between the parties was not fulfilled, so a contract had not been formed.
So my question is, did he get the money back?
I gotta assume he did.
Man, that would be a bitch.
The bank guy's like, so where's that $23 million Harrier? What do you have as collateral? Nothing.
It does not say what happened to the cash.
And how much money did he spend on the lawyer?
It also does not say. I'm reading a Wikipedia page. the court description of the ad is pretty good. The teenager, hold on. The observer senses the presence of a mighty plane as the extreme winds generated by its flight create a paper maelstrom in a classroom devoted to otherwise dull physics lessons. Finally, the Harrier jet swings into view and lands by the side of the school building next to a bicycle rack. Several students run for cover, and the velocity of the wind strips one hapless faculty member down to his underwear. While the faculty member is being deprived of his dignity, the voiceover announces, "Now, the more Pepsi you drink, the more great stuff you're gonna get." The teenager opens the cockpit of the fighter and can be seen helmetless, holding a Pepsi, looking very pleased with himself. The teenager exclaims, "Sure beats the bus," and chortles. The military drum roll sounds a final time, and the following words appear: "Harrier fighter, 7 million Pepsi points." A few seconds later, "Drink Pepsi, get stuff" shows up on the screen.
Oh, so it actually said "Harrier 7 million."
It was a contract
on screen.
Man, that kind of sucks.
On screen, and some lawyer really wanted to be a creative writer.
700 grand.
Wow,
your own Harrier. I don't know why we're talking about that. Tesla's making a self-driving car.
We were talking about that.
I know. I'm not going to bang the noise, though. Tesla's making their own self-driving car, but it will still require a driver.
As do Google's.
For now. I just want to get in the car and be like, "Google, take me to Portland." And then wake up in Portland the next
day. Well, you would be technically a driver in the car.
Not if I'm asleep. Then I'm a bad driver.
Sure, but you're still a driver.
Yeah, I don't think I'd want to drive up those windy-ass roads to Oregon with a self-driving car. I don't think I trust the machine that much. What if the yellow line goes away? What if the GPS is a
little
off?
You just said you wanted
off?
To sleep in the car. And yeah, I know. I'm thinking.
I've had one of my trademarks set on unpredictable changes apart. Anything else in the news, gentlemen? Okay. I'm going to play a little bit of music, and then we're going to talk about some other stuff. Do we have anything we've been testing that we'd like to talk about? It's been kind of a busy week because we're getting ready to go to New York. Wes? We haven't seen you since you got back from Dragon Con.
Yeah. The only thing I've been testing recently is finishing up my gaming mouse testing for the wire cutter.
Okay.
And this week I've been writing more than testing. I've kind of finished up.
I never got the solenoid I needed to make your button tester.
We were talking about doing that, yeah.
Once I figured out how long it would take to test the buttons with one machine, we would have to build like 10 machines for each of the mice you're testing. And it would have been pretty ridiculous.
Doing the top ones would have been a good addition, but
getting a million clicks is still, if you do one a second, it's still like 11 days per mouse.
Which is a long time.
It's a long time.
But
I know that because of the $1 million game show. Or million second game show.
I know that because I know that there's 11 days in a million seconds.
Because of the million second game show.
I knew about that before the million second game show.
I don't think a million seconds existed before the million second game show.
Pretty sure a million seconds existed. What's the million second game show also?
That's a big thing on NBC right now.
Is it a big thing? If it's on NBC, is it really a big thing?
No.
30 Rock was on NBC.
30 Rock was.
Friends was on NBC.
On NBC. Hey, I heard that America's Got Talent's finale is tonight.
Series or?
I don't know. I don't think it really matters.
It does.
What else is on NBC?
Because it would mean there'd be no more.
James Spader is on NBC. I've seen a lot of ads for that.
And is Ultron.
Really? He's Ultron?
He will be.
I didn't know that.
Right?
Or is that just a rumor?
Yeah, he's the villain of the next Avengers, which is pretty awesome.
James Spader in The Blacklist. Tuesdays on NBC. I don't actually know about Tuesdays.
The Blacklist is a program about a spy who goes dark and then gets all sorts of information about super criminals or something. I don't know. Can we trust him? I'm not sure. Are there a lot of big musical hits and weird sounds in that show? Probably. Is James Spader super creepy? Definitely. He's bald now.
He went from
Footloose. Like, no, that's Kevin Bacon. Yeah.
He went from earnest and actor in Stargate.
Oh,
he was a '90s sex symbol.
Yeah, he was in '80s. He was in creepy Cronenberg movies and all sorts of stuff.
Crash.
And also Secretary.
Yep, he's been creepy for a long time.
I think that was probably post James Spader's sex symbol phase.
I don't know. Secretary might have brought it back
by a decade.
But he got real old real fast.
Yeah. He was in The Office for a while.
I think it was that. The Practice.
IMDb page. Dude.
He was on The Office after Michael Scott. I guess he was there for a season.
He was on The Practice for a long time.
He was on Boston Legal with Shatner,
which is a spinoff of The Practice.
He was on The Pentagon Papers, which was a TV movie.
I saw some weird movie on IFC once that was from the 80s with James Spader and his like evil twin and also James Spader. And the first like half an hour or something of the movie follows James Spader, and then he dies, and then James Spader wakes up, and it's the other James Spader, the twin, and then the rest of the movie is like about him.
Sounds like a David Lynch film.
Like, I guess trying to figure out how his brother died or something. I think it's hanged. Like, it was weird.
Wow. He was in Mannequin. It's conceptual. It's Jack's Back is what that is called.
That movie?
I'm pretty sure.
Can you tell? Because there's two James names. Spaders on the... On the front.
A serial killer in Los Angeles celebrates Jack the Ripper's 100th birthday by committing serial. I don't think that's it.
That's not, no.
Was he the serial killer? James Spader's done some weird shit.
I think he probably was. He's billed first, so I got to imagine he was a serial killer.
Could have been the detective trying to catch him.
Oh, no. Here it is. This is it. A young doctor is suspected when a series of Jack the Ripper copycat killings is committed. However, when the doctor himself is murdered, his identical twin brother claims to have seen visions of the true killer.
Yeah, that was it.
Sounds like it.
It's turned out they're actually both the same person?
Nope. I just read the synopsis.
I'm asking Wes.
I don't remember. I don't think I watched all of it.
Because there was also what's that dude from The Rock from the Sun?
Richard Mull?
No, The Rock from the Sun.
Michael Mull?
Mull? The old dude.
Alec Baldwin. Jordan.
John Lithgow?
John Lithgow had a movie.
He was in 30 Rock from the Sun?
Yeah.
He was
I'm sorry. I thought we were talking about 30 Rock still.
John Lithgow had a movie in the early 90s where he played two versions of himself. He played a person with multiple personality disorder.
He's a good
identity
villain.
Disassociation.
He was in Footloose.
He was a... asshole and cliffhanger.
A fucking dick in Footloose, man.
I think that movie was called Raising Kane.
That is the name of that movie. He would fucking Spader was in a ton of stuff.
Yeah.
He was in Pretty in Pink and Mannequin and Less Than Zero.
He was in Wall Street. He was in Mannequin with Sex and the City's Kim Cattrall.
Probably she was the mannequin, if I remember correctly. I don't think he was the hero, though. I think it was Andrew McCarthy who was the hero.
In Pretty in Pink, he's like the leather jacket wearing asshole badass.
He's the bad
kid.
Guy, yeah. He plays Cobra Kai.
Sure.
Basically.
Yeah. James Spader's pretty cool.
Anything else you've been testing besides James Spader, Wes?
Don't say that.
Hey, Amazon Amazon Instant Streaming for iOS now has Apple TV AirPlay.
Really?
So you can have James Spader wherever you want.
Wow. Wow, so that means you can get everything except for Cinemax and Showtime to go on Apple TV now, all the major video stuff. Maybe Vudu. I don't think they count as major, though. That's
pretty
cool.
It's not native on Apple TV.
No, you have to stream AirPlay. But AirPlay is the gateway. It'll be interesting to see if Apple opens their device to Amazon's video store. Because you can have a digital collection. Like, the weird thing about Amazon Instant Video is if you buy digital download videos from Amazon, they show up in the same app as Amazon Video, you know, Amazon's video streaming service.
Like, I think yes, but you just won't be able to buy them from within the Apple TV.
I'm sure that's the case.
Kindle.
So this is probably a good time to have a brief talk about things that will get you banned from our YouTube channel.
Really?
Why not? We'll put it here and then I'll do it someplace else at a different time. We'll beta test it here.
Really?
What? You don't want to do this?
I don't think it's necessary.
I think it's good to let people know what gets them blocked. Things like racism, ad hominem attacks.
I think that's, these are things that...
Generally like, being a general,
I mean, like being a YouTube commenter?
Yeah.
No, here's the thing.
I don't think this needs to be explicitly said.
You don't?
No, I think...
You think we just continue using an arbitrary set of guidelines and rules? Or just don't
do
just
mean,
see the comments?
The rule of the social contract?
I have noticed that since we have started actively blocking the shit out of people on YouTube... The comments have become, I don't want to say civil, but they've become, you can have a conversation now.
Well, that's good. Then that's the policy. There you go. Just continue doing that.
Okay.
Nature finds a way.
So if you're an asshole, we're going to block you.
There you go.
That's all there is to it.
It is on paper now.
Don't be a racist either. That's not cool.
In life or on YouTube.
Good advice all around. Things we've been testing? We'll be at Maker Faire. That's
I'd
what
like
we're testing
this week.
I'd like
to see people who are racist in real life be extremely polite on YouTube. Just to mix it up.
Try something new?
Yeah.
Maybe that's their, like they feel a little bad about it. That's their guilty. Like,
maybe. Well, maybe the like, inverse is
oh,
true.
Oh, man. I came back from that clan meeting, and I can't let my clan friends know. I'm a helpful, polite person on YouTube.
Comment on self-help videos. And
what if it's the opposite,
it's
though?
Really
no, the opposite is what happens in real life.
People are super polite, and they take out all their normal day-to-day rage on YouTube comments?
I mean, not necessarily super polite, but yeah, you can be a normal person who wouldn't use racial slurs to somebody's face, and then you'd go on YouTube and put some bad shit down.
Fucking YouTube. Okay, that'll do it for what we're testing. Questions? We have a couple good ones.
Emails?
Well, but we do the other one.
Emails.
We don't do emails, we do...
Emails?
No.
Questions.
Boom.
Hello, tested crew. I am Aaron from Windsor, California, which is not too far from you guys. I have two quick questions. Why do you keep hating on Star Wars The Clone Wars? And will iOS 7 be available on iPad 2? Love the show. You guys are awesome. Keep up the good work. Aaron from Windsor, California.
Clone Wars, the CG show?
I do not have that information. He just says, why do you guys keep hating on The Clone Wars? I think that probably when we mention The Clone Wars, it's in the context of episode 1, 2, and 3, which are pieces of doggerel.
No, I think he means the animated TV show.
I thought some of the animated stuff was okay.
Has Gary... had bad things to say about
this. Might have even been a question for the other podcast. It's unclear because all questions go to the same email address, podcast@tested.com.
I think that it was meant for this podcast because he wouldn't have asked the iPad 2 question.
Fair point.
And the answer for that is yes.
Yeah, iOS 7 will be available for iPad 2. It runs reasonably well, assuming that it runs the same as it does on my Mini, which is essentially the same device.
Is available
right now. By the time you hear this, you can go download it. Just go to your update thing.
I kind of hate all prequel Star Wars stuff just from the universe setting, but I have seen like two episodes of that show and it was quite well done.
You know what he might be talking about is when we say we don't buy any prequel Lego stuff, because I only buy original trilogy Lego toys. So I wouldn't buy, say, a Naboo Starfighter Lego kit.
Sure, because you don't have a connection with that.
No, I think it's a piece of shit. I think it's the worst Starfighter that was ever made.
Oh, come on.
That one from the beginning of episode 3 that Obi-Wan and Anakin fly, that one's okay,
the,
I guess.
The pre-X-Wing kind of...
It's kind of like... It's almost like a... I guess it's kind of... It has S-foils, but they go the wrong way. It's weird. It's kind of almost like a... It's almost like a TIE Advanced. More than...
Clearly designed to evoke the look of the X-Wing.
No, no, not that one. That's the one that the non-Jedi fly. I'm talking about the ones that the Jedi fly. The one that the Jedi fly looks like a Y-Wing with little pop-out side things that make it look like a stumpy TIE Advanced.
I'll be honest. I haven't watched that movie since 2007.
You're a good person.
Yeah, I don't know.
We're okay with that. I feel like we answered that question sufficiently, so I'm going to go to the next question. Hey, Tested Crew. Aman from Auckland, New Zealand here. Fun fact, the Sky Tower in Auckland City is the largest freestanding structure in the Southern Hemisphere, measuring 328 meters high, which is also 176 feet. Now to the question. I'm looking at buying a Mac Mini for university purposes, and I'm just wondering your opinion on factory refurbished items or just factory refurbished technology in general. Quick question, will there be a Mac Mini refresh soon? Thanks.
No.
They're due for a Mac Mini refresh because they haven't done one. They haven't done a Haswell one yet. I don't know that it'll be in time for a student going to university in the fall.
Also, do those? Do they do the refreshes on those like
once a year
consistently, or is it kind of a, oh, by the way, there's a new one that's been 16 months or something?
It seems like they do them. My hunch is that they do them when their price on the chips gets right for them to, because it's a relatively low volume item compared to, say, laptops.
Right.
It's definitely updated more frequently than the Mac Pros, which are hardly updated at all. But I feel like you're probably right. I feel it's probably not 12 months like the iMacs. It's probably 16 or 14 or something like that. I don't have a problem. As long as you're buying from a company that's going to warranty it effectively, I don't mind buying refurbished stuff. I have no problem at all with that. Make sure that if you're buying something that has an LCD panel, that their policy on dead and stuck pixels is good. Other than that, go for it. Save your $100. Get something that has somebody else's dead skin on it already. And that'll do it for questions. Anything to add, Norm?
No.
If you have a question for This Is Only a Test, the email address is podcast@tested.com. We are out of here. We will see you guys at Maker Faire this weekend in New York City. And we'll be back next Thursday with another edition of This Is Only a Test. Still untitled, still on hiatus. We will be back with that on October 1. We recorded some the other day. I don't know that we're going to get to them until week after next, just because we're traveling and stuff. But they are apparently real humdingers. So we will.
I was there. They are humdingers.
Norm, you heard it from Norman Chan. They're humdingers. Today's outro comes from Mr. Logical. If you would like to submit your own outro to This Is Only a Test, you can Google raw outro song file, and the instructions for making a outro song are there. So you can take something that we said, put it wildly out of context to make us sound like lunatics. Thanks for sending this in, Mr. Logical.
Hi there. I didn't see you.
That's it.
Outro, by the way, for us, we're running low. Google raw outro song file. The instructions for editing it and putting it together with Audacity or something like that are on there.
Wow.
That's very meta.
Wow.
Very meta.
Was that planned?
I listened to that beforehand. I clicked the one that I didn't mean to click. Can we play the one I meant to click?
No. Let's, nope. Nope, nope.
Save it?
Nope. You got one chance to click that button. Hey, you know, some homework.
What's homework, Norm?
Go look up the derivation of the phrase rule of thumb.
You mean right? That's now?
No. We're done.
It's a principle with a broad application. It's not intended to be strictly accurate or reliable for every situation.
That's the definition, not the derivation. That's okay.
You meant the derivation.
Over.